Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to talk with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, today is Monday, and we are talking about freedom. We're talking about making good choices. We're talking about agency. We're talking about knowing when to leave. We're also going to talk about the hashtag MeToo moment. After 30 years, can you still pursue it with the same type of vigor and energy that you would if it was, say, last year or 10 years ago? Or maybe every single person who has been involved with a sexual harassment case needs to come down, no matter how long it's been. We're going to talk about that today. I also want to talk about that reoccurring dream that I have where I walk in on the day when I'm tired of my job and I tell my bosses that I am quitting and that it's over. I thought about that when that football player retired in the middle of the game. Like, that was a serious boss move. So I want to talk about what does it take to make that kind of decision and whether or not that actually affects the game. We're going to talk about all of that and more because we are going to break down some of the biggest news stories that's been happening over the last couple of weeks. We want to open up those phone lines, 410-319-8888, because you're going to like this next topic. Today, Monday, September 17th, 1849. I want you to picture this. Harriet Tubman escaped American enslavement with her brothers Ben and Henry. She feared that after her plantation owner died, that she and the other enslaved people on the plantation would be sold to a slave owner, Dr. Anthony Thompson, who owned a large plantation in Carolyn County, Maryland. After she left, there was a $300 reward for their capture. It was Sister Harriet, who we all know was Minty. That's what her daddy used to call her, Araminta Ross. He called her Minty. She escaped to freedom to the north in 1849. She became the most famous conductor on the Underground Railroad. They called her Moses. Harriet Tubman risked her life to lead hundreds of family members and other enslaved people from the plantation system to freedom on this elaborate secret network of safe houses. Now, we all know that her exact route is unknown, but what we do know is that Sister Tubman figured it out. She never lost a passenger. She didn't let anybody turn back. The word is that she would carry a pistol with her. And when she would tell people, people who got afraid, people who wanted to go tell, we all know folks like this who jump into the program with you and they figure out halfway along the way they don't have the strength to go the full route with you. She would say, you go forward or you die. This idea that freedom is something that is within our reach. I know we have a lot of young people listening, and I'm sure you've talked about Harriet Tubman in your classes. I'm sure when it comes around and you're talking about Black History Month, Harriet Tubman is one of the big six that you talk about, right? Because one of the things about the way we compartmentalize American history in this country is that we have led our young people to somehow believe that Black history is separate from American history rather than Black history being a part and parcel of American history. So we wait until Black History Month to start talking about all the contributions that Black folks have made to this country. And then we talk about the big six. We talk to our kids about Frederick Douglass, and we talk to our kids about Harriet Tubman, and we talk about Rosa Parks. I mean, we go through the list. We've now added Obama as one of the big six, as if that's all we've ever contributed. We had Martin Luther King Jr. We had Malcolm X. But Black history is American history, and Harriet Tubman's story is our story. It's not just a story of a Black woman born enslaved who made the decision to steal herself, claim her own freedom, but she also, and this is what makes her so extraordinary, made the decision to go back time and time and time again for others. I don't believe in the myth of Harriet Tubman, that she was everywhere all over the place. No, she was very concentrated, she was very focused, and she stayed committed to the work that she was doing. So today, we celebrate Harriet Tubman because it is on this day in 1849 that Sister Tubman stole herself. Now, we have a clip. Two clips, in fact. One is of an Underground Railroad Harriet Tubman song, just to kind of have you think about what that must have been like for her. I'm going to start off by playing that clip, and then I want to talk about what if Harriet Tubman could rap. So let's take a listen to this.
I want a freedom, y'all. Revolutionists have got my back. mama for my savior. Been a runaway since my master passed, and my life is on a thinning line, but I ain't going back. We're running 'cause we know that freedom's what we love, and my mind keeps telling me that our time will come.
Harriet Tubman, a little bit of her this morning, this afternoon, the Underground Railroad song clip. What I think is most interesting about Harriet Tubman is that after the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 passed, she helped guide fugitives farther north into the British North America, and she helped newly freed people find work. She also met the abolitionist John Brown in 1858, and she helped him to plan and recruit supporters for the raid on Harper's Ferry. But her work wasn't done then. When the Civil War began, Harriet Tubman worked for the Union Army, first as a cook, then as a nurse, then as an armed scout, and then as a spy. She was the first woman to lead an armed expedition in the war. She guided the raid at Combahee Ferry, which liberated more than 700 enslaved people. After the war, she retired to the family home on property she had purchased in 1859 up in upstate New York, where she cared for her aging parents. Harriet Tubman was also active in the women's suffrage movement until illness overtook her and she had to be admitted to a home for elderly African-American people, a home that she helped to establish years earlier. After she died in 1913, she became an icon of American courage and freedom. When the Civil War ended, Harriet Tubman dedicated her life to helping impoverished, formerly enslaved people and the elderly. Now, in honor of her life and by popular demand, in 2016, the U.S. Treasury Department announced that Harriet Tubman, as she should, will replace Andrew Jackson on the center of the new $20 bill. I'm waiting for that to happen. I want to listen to this final clip as we lift up Harriet Tubman today. What if Harriet Tubman could rap? This is by Smart Hip Hop Global. Let's do that, and then we'll get into our conversation for today.
Nah, it ain't a literal train, it's a form of resistance. Just with the railroad theme, so a station's a safe house where the runaways go. And the runaway slaves are considered cargo. The person who hit them considered a station master. And the stockholder's the one who will put the cash up. Me, I'm the conductor, I transported the cargo. Routes that I took remain secret. I took an oath, boss of my train, you get on. There is no rebelling. Grown man said he turning back, and I had to tell him, fam, why you had me bring the metal out? Cock it back, point it at your head and bring the devil out. There's no going back. Besides, you gon' snitch and I'll kill you where you stand before you sing behind a whip. Running from slave catchers, a bounty on my head until my whole fam free. I don't really care.
So we just thought it'd be quite apropos to pay a little bit of homage today to Harriet Tubman, to her contribution, to her work, to her sacrifice, to what does it mean to get to a point where you're willing to lean in, you're willing to contribute everything you have, you're willing to make a difference even if you don't make it out alive. When I used to tell my sons the story of Harriet Tubman, the thing that they would lock in on that really intrigued them is that she never knew whether she was going to make it all the way to safety, time and time again. She never knew when she got back down into the enslaved areas whether or not people were going to go with her, but she went anyway. She never knew if she was going to be able to lead them all the way to freedom, but she did anyway. To me, that's what Black Girl Magic looks like. And it also connects to a story that my wonderful intern Deja pulled from me about 19 Black women are running for judge in Harris County, Texas, and making history at the same time. I'm telling you, Black Girl Magic is happening all the time. In one county in Texas, 19 Black women are making political history. The ladies are running for judge in the upcoming election and together make up the largest number seen on the ballot in Harris County history. It also marks the first time in history that 19 Black women are running for judicial seats in one county, which happens to be the third largest county in the United States. I keep wondering, with this age of Donald Trump, has anything positive come out of Trump's presidency? Anything at all? I think one positive thing is that he is actually putting a spit under the fire so that people who normally sit on the sidelines are now jumping into the fray. He's given people the onus to get into the game. You no longer have to wait and learn the old school way of how to be in politics. If Donald Trump could do it, you know what? So can you. All you need is desire to get in the game. We just want to lift up those 19 black women who are running for judge in Harris County. I want to ask you a question today, and this is where we're going to really begin our conversation. I want to know from you, how much do you think the government needs to be actively involved in technology? So there's just been this conversation happening with some Congress folks talking about technology and the ways in which the government is thinking about regulating technology. They are concerned that we don't have any safeguards in place because children are exposed to technology. We know now that the largest group addicted to pornography through the internet is 13 and 14 year old boys. They're trying to figure out how can they put these safeguards in place. So one of the things they've been talking about is regulating technology and turning off the internet, saying that after a certain hour in the evening to turn it off. That is what is on the table, whether or not you think that the government should get involved. Do we need Big Brother and Big Sister to get actively involved in the ways in which we're dealing with technology in our own homes and have them regulated for us? 410-319-8888. We're talking about the internet. We're talking about the ways in which we make choices in our house and whether or not the government should get involved and help us to regulate it. What is interesting is that they're testing a mechanism this week. I was taking a look at this on the New York Times website, and the mechanism will allow Donald Trump to send us a text directly to our phones. He said if there's an emergency, he wants to be able to contact every single American who has a cell phone at one time. Should Donald Trump be able to send you a text message directly to your phones? Like, should the government have that kind of access to us at all times? 410-319-8888. I spent some time talking about this with my students today because we were trying to figure out, what does it mean for a society to need the regulation of the government in that sense, right? So if we break it down and we think about why they would want to do it, they listed five reasons why they said that they should step in and they should help to regulate the internet, which is setting up safeguards, turning it off and on. So one reason is around children. There's this notion that children are getting too much time with technology, and we can't figure out how we can best monitor the amount of time that our children are spending in front of the computer. Is it 2 hours a day? Is it 3 hours a day? How much time should young children sit with technology? Now, we know in the old days when mom or dad would ride along and the baby starts making noise in the back, you would start talking to the child, making noises, maybe telling stories. Well, today, those parents who grew up with the parents talking to them are now giving technology to the children. You see technology in the crib. This group that's coming up now, this new generation, they are digital natives. They're growing up with technology. So the first reason that they would want to regulate is to think about what's happening to our children, because we don't know what the long-term impact is going to be with all of this technology in the hands of our children. Should a 2-year-old be able to sit and open up the phones? Should a 5-year-old have their own form of communication, playing with your phone all day? Should we see families out at the restaurant instead of engaging with their children? Every child has an iPad on the phone. It keeps them quiet. But how is it impacting them? What's the long-term impact? So first, it's dealing with our children. Second, they're making the argument that Americans are not getting enough rest, that we are spending all of our time in front of technology. I just want to ask you, I mean, how many times have you sat in front of the computer, you've gone onto your Facebook page or your Snapchat or your Instagram, and before you know it, it's been 2-3 hours. Like, you've fallen into a hole where you follow the worm all the way and you're getting more and more involved and engrossed and you're losing time. They find that people are not as productive anymore because of technology. People are no longer engaging with one another because of technology. People are dealing with this thing called ambient intimacy, where they are so connected to their technology that they're not even aware of what's going on around them. And so the government said, we can step in, we can regulate this so that people can get some rest. Third is a reason I mentioned more. If you look at it, people are not using the internet for research. That's not the number one reason why people are on the internet. People are not using the internet for social media. The number one reason is not around Facebook. The number one reason is not around trying to go to Wikipedia or Google. The number one reason is for pornography. That is the number one reason why people go on technology. It's the most downloaded content on the net. So in order to break that cycle, you got to cut it off. That's the third reason. Let's cut it off. Let's see what's going on. The fourth reason is that the government said it's well within their rights. If they see a need in society, and this is a need area, that they can step in and they can do something about it. Because that's what they're supposed to do. When we vote them into office, we vote them into office to be able to make the best decisions for us. Now, I'm just throwing this out. I don't necessarily feel that the government should actually have that kind of control. But a fourth reason is them wanting to help us, saying that, you know, you don't know how to do this. You voted for us. We should be able to see your need and then take care of us. So that's the fourth reason. They see it as a way of helping. And a fifth reason is this access reason, that if the government needs to reach us and say it needs to reach every single American at one time, well, President Trump said the best way he can do that is to be able to reach out to people's cell phones. This particular policy was not even enacted under President Trump. This particular policy was actually discussed and put in place under President Obama. It's just Trump is the one who wants to go forward. Do you want Trump? Donald Trump, who tweets nonstop, who gets up in the middle of the night with a thought, who sends out a tweet 2, 3, 4 a.m. in the morning. Sometimes they're not even very coherent tweets, to be able to send that to your phone, because it will be left up to his discretion whether or not this is something of an emergency. That's what's interesting about this. Should the government be allowed, be able, should the government go forth with regulating the internet? Now, we have a clip on the kids. I want to play this clip. Let's take a listen to this, and then I'm going to give some of your comments off of Facebook Live when we come back. Keep it right here.
The average amount of time kids spend in front of screens is 7.5 hours a day. Now, I know you may be thinking, not my kid, but really think about it. The time spent on the iPad, the time spent watching TV, the time spent texting, video games, cell phones, it all adds up to just too much. The latest research shows less than 50% of parents limit their kids' media usage.
We have a timer and we set it for 30 to 40 minutes apiece.
Sandra Toll isn't one of them.
Watch a video.
Sandra says when she first got her tablet, Ethan, Evan, and Ella, ages 8, 7, and 6, were quickly becoming one with the iPad.
We can be like, Ethan, and he's just in it.
Play games. I like to watch things.
Rules were soon to follow.
If we didn't, they wouldn't sleep. They wouldn't eat. They wouldn't do anything. And so I think that's kind of our job. We have to.
A lot of behavior and emotional problems are not behavior and emotional problems.
Dr. Gregory Ramey, mental health director of Dayton Children's Hospital, says sleeplessness, irritability, trouble focusing can all be symptoms of constant media stimulation.
Kids aren't learning how to navigate real relationships with real people in real time, are being replaced with images and text messages.
Ramey says set guidelines at an early age like Sandra and enforce them consistently.
Shut off the television during meal.
Okay, did you hear that? The average amount of time, 7.5 hours. Listen to how insane that is. There are only 24 hours in the day. And if you break that up, you mean a third of a child's time is spent on technology. But I'm challenging you to think for a second. How much time do you spend on your phones? I had my students last week put together a technology chart. I said, you know what I want you to do? Every time you pick up your phone and you do a like on Facebook, make a note about it. Every time you go to Instagram and you send out a photo, just make a little check about it. Every time you send out a text, not texting the same person, but every time you text someone new, just keep this chart. Just do it for 3 days. When they came back and they looked at the amount of time, one of my students in one day has sent 672 Instagram posts. in one day. I said, that's a job. You have spent a bulk of your waking hours doing technology. Let's be specific, social media. And the question is why. Maybe the government should step in and regulate it. 410-319-8888. We have Ayana on the phone. Ayana, how are you? Welcome to the family. New caller.
Hi, I'm fine.
So what do you think, Ayana? Yeah, I can hear you fine.
I don't think that the government should have the authority to regulate technology in the way that you all have been talking about it on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that it's a parent's responsibility to regulate their children's use of technology. And instead of trying to regulate technology, I think that it's possible for people to put different types of things that the parents can learn from so that they can use the technology that they have in, like, a positive way for the children. Like, I think that technology, I mean, the children are, they know technology since from their birth, basically, you know.
Right.
This is the age of technology. My own sister, she's, like, so much more involved in technology than I am, but I think that that's a positive thing because that's the world that we live in today.
Well, now, how old is your sister?
She's 17.
So she's a zillennial. Like, this new generation coming in, younger than the millennials. Yes. They seem to be a little bit more outgoing, into activism. So for her, that technology is a lifeline for her.
It is. And I found that because I'm a teacher, I found that a lot of my students are more interested in being professionals within the technology world and realm. And so I don't feel that the government should have that kind of regulation over our lives. Like,
so you said the government should not step in. Well, let me make sure I'm getting both. One, you don't think the government should be turning the internet on and off at a set time. But do you think Donald Trump should be sending you a text to your phone when he has a message for you?
No, I don't think that he should be sending these messages, and I don't think that they should regulate both. No.
Ayana, thank you so much for calling. Folks, this is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Keep it here, because when we come back, I want to explore this topic a little bit more. Donald Trump, should he have the ability to send a text message directly to your phone? And should the government turn off technology? Maybe they should. Keep it here. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, we're just talking today about technology. I've been thinking a lot about this, trying to take a look at how much time I spend on social media. How much time do I spend engaging with the screen rather than with the people in my life? How much time am I following threads? How much time am I sending out tweets? Because it's showing that the average person, they're talking about young people here, spend about 7.5 hours on social media, on some form of technology. And that adults spend even more. So if they're only 24 hours in a day, and we all know that's it, how much time are we spending? And as a result of this, the conversation that's been taking place, and I've been taking a look at some of the technology articles, is whether or not the government should step in. Should somebody step in and regulate the internet? I'm just wondering if that's a good idea. Look at this. So one of the things that social media allows people to do is that like-minded people can come together. So if I like to read and write and cook, I can meet other people all around the world, all around the planet who love to read, write, and cook. It's providing that same type of outlet for people that are pedophiles or people that are white supremacists or people that are white nationalists. Like, they can find a place to meet, get organized, and then stage a Charlottesville. Like, the technology is bringing those type of groups together. Is that the kind of price that we want to pay? And what would it really hurt us to have someone step in? I mean, right now, the internet is like the wild, wild west. This is the first time in the history of person kind that we have ever communicated like this, the very first time. From the ways in which we developed from being an oral society and then, of course, into cave paintings and becoming a scribal society where only a few people could read and write the king's messages, into being a print society with the rise of the printing press and the push to put the Bible into the hands of everyone, and then, of course, into the electronic age. This is revolutionary in terms of the ways in which we are communicating. But is that necessarily bringing us closer together? If there are no regulations in place, then how do we know when enough is enough? How do we know how much screen time our children should have? You know, I hear that they say 2 hours a day. Some people say 4 hours a day. How much is enough? What is interesting is that this generation now, the babies that have technology in their hands, we are actually experimenting on them because we don't know what the long-term impact is going to be. We have no idea about a two-year-old who is engaging with your cell phone at this minute so you can keep them quiet while you're listening to the show. What's going to be the impact when that two-year-old turns 10? When that two-year-old turns 12, like, what's going to happen? It's kind of like the whole language experiment that we tried. Remember that? We used to do phonics and phonemics in the schools. They took out phonics and phonemics. And for those of you who are not familiar, phonics and phonemics is a way of teaching young people how to read. It's where you learn all the sounds. You learn that the C is a K sound. That's phonics and phonemics. They took out phonics and phonemics. They put in whole language where you learn the word itself. You learn the word mother instead of each of the individual sounds. That generation ended up getting to college. They had very poor spelling skills, very poor reading skills, because they never learned how to sound out. They took out whole language and they put back in phonics and phonemics. But a generation had to suffer while that happened. So right now, as we're figuring out technology, there's a generation that we are experimenting on. How are you putting safeguards in place? And do you agree maybe the government should step in and do it? We have Kenneth on the line. Kenneth, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Well, hello there.
How are you?
Is that you putting that extra coffee in your producer's cup?
Today is my producer's birthday, so be nice to my award-winning producer, Justina, today for her birthday.
Justine, happy birthday. Ms. Powers? Yes, okay. Yes.
So what do you think, Kenneth? Yes, so should the government step in and help us out here?
Government, but listen, because this thing is bigger than all of us, you know what? Because let me tell you something, and this is very serious. Our children don't have to read books anymore.
No, they don't.
They don't. All they have to do is say, Google, give me the American history of so-and-so, or Google, what's 5 times 10? You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Google is going to give it to them. Our children are no longer thinking for themselves. You got some kids out here, actually, and I hate to say this, that don't even know how to read and write.
No, I mean, that is an absolute true statement to make. There are some young people who never learn how to correctly read and write, because I do think people are reading and writing, but there really is a correct way to do it so you can build on that skill over a lifetime.
Yeah, this thing is huge. This thing is huge. They're going to have to do something about this technology and cut it down on certain parts of the day, or cut it off certain parts of the day, or do something. I'm more concerned about our kids than I am the grown-ups.
Oh, yeah, we can't do anything about the grown-ups. Well, you know what? But let me just say this, Kenneth. When you say the grown-ups, are you talking about the boomers who are like over 65? Are you talking about the Xers who are now hitting 50? Are you talking about the millennials, those that are in their mid-20s? Are you talking about the Zillennials, which are the ones in high school? Who are you talking about on that spectrum?
Most people who are in business, students, college students, elementary school kids, what is the elementary school kids doing with cell phones? You know, access to Google and all those other apps, you know, and can be able to say, well, you know, do this for me, do that for me.
Right, instead of doing it themselves. All right, thank you so much, Kenneth. I mean, I remember when I was looking at that Alexa report that came out, where you put these things in your home and they're actually listening to you. See, folks are pushing back on me about the government putting regulations in place. Folks, do you know how much Big Brother and Big Sister are already in our lives? And I am not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just saying, when you get that phone and you start stalking everywhere that you go, taking your pictures. They got so much information on you anyway. They might as well step in there inside your life anyway. 410-319-8888. Let's talk about it. We have Florence on the phone. Florence, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for accepting my call. Dr. K, I really can't believe you're saying this.
You mean you don't want Donald Trump to send you a text message in the middle of the night?
Of all the people, no, Dr. K, no, no. If it was somebody else, I would. But this man doesn't respect anything. He doesn't even respect the office he's in.
No
Why
boundaries.
I want him to invade my privacy.
Oh, it's something else. It is something else.
We have to control our own children.
I agree.
We can't let this man do this to us. No, that's too much. That's too much of my privacy given away to him.
Well, let me ask you this. My concern, Florence, is that is it a slippery slope, right? So they start off turning the internet off at 10 o'clock. And before you know it, they are regulating everything we do. And does that also mean that they'll control what news we get?
No, I don't want that. I don't want him. I don't want this particular person, no. He doesn't have respect for anything or anybody.
No, he does not.
Not even the office, like I said before.
No, I agree with you.
I wouldn't want him doing this to me. No, no.
So do you think if it was a different president, say Hillary would have won, would you have let Hillary say, well, you know, she can send me text messages. She seems sane. So does it matter who it is?
Why would they want to send me individual text messages, though? That's what I'm
What Trump is saying, in the case of an emergency, he wants to be able to reach every American with a cell phone at one time.
Well, they do that now with the TV.
That's what I'm saying.
What's the big deal? I mean, not him.
No, not him. Okay. No. All right. Thank you so much, Florence. Appreciate it. We have Tracy on the phone from Baltimore. Tracy, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well. So what do you think? Government regulate technology or no?
I remember when I went to a church. And here in Baltimore City, and a pastor, he said, family is the smallest yet strongest form of government on earth.
Oh, I like that.
And I truly believe that. Parents are the regulators of the household. So when it comes to our kids accessing technology throughout all hours of the day, it's the parents that have control over that. So when, you know, you mentioned that our teenage boys, you know, between ages of 14 and 15, you know, watches, you know, countless hours of porn.
Yes.
I point that issue at the mother or the father, whoever the guardian is.
Right.
Take the cell phone.
Well, let me ask you that, Tracy. Well, why is it that parents seem to be afraid to take the technology from the hands of their teenagers?
Because parents, I think they're... You mentioned that, you know, a two-year-old looking at a phone while their mother or father are trying to watch their TV show.
Yeah.
I think that we are so consumed in technology ourselves that we get wrapped in it.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
We get annoyed when our kids are bothering us while we're scrolling through Facebook, scrolling through Instagram, watching YouTube videos, watching Power, watching all of these other outside factors that are affected, you know, our family unit. And I think everyone is distracted. As a parent, you should govern how much time your child watches television, how much time they are on their cell phones. You know, we should not have to come to the point where the government is stepping in to regulate things. That means the adults of the household, they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And I'm a parent myself.
So how do you regulate? How much time do you allow your children to spend on technology per day?
So my son, he's only 5 years old.
Okay.
So technology, he's not. I don't give him my phone. If I do give him my phone, it's for him to take a picture of me.
Okay.
Because he wants to take a picture of me. But me actually giving my son my phone and him sitting there all throughout the hours of day to watch certain things? No. Or if we are watching a video on YouTube, like it's a Wildcrack show that you could go to PBS for, he and I are sitting there and we're watching it together.
So you're regulating along with him. I like that.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Tracy. I appreciate you. We have Jared on the phone. Jared's a new caller from New Jersey. Jared, welcome to the family.
Hey, thank you very much.
So what do you think? Should the government regulate technology?
You know, I actually teach at University of Maryland, and I teach technology there in the theater department. And what we are always looking at are, there's a bunch of essays out there right now that's looking at when you receive an email, you get a ping of dopamine that happens in your brain that you're like, oh, I want to read that. And then upon reading it, there's, you know, a sense of like opioids kind of going into your brain that creates this. Well, we have been calling it a loop of dissatisfaction. You always want more. You always want more. You always want more. And so when you're looking at that, the only other times that really happens in the human body is with gambling, drinking, and smoking, all of which are addictive things that all have age restrictions on them. And so for me, I think looking at it that way, when you're looking at going to the bottle when you're feeling depressed or going to the bottle when you're feeling anxious or, you know, there's a very similar thing that's happening with social media right now. And so to me, it's more about how do we equip our children developmentally with the ability to socialize, the ability to cope, the ability to communicate to each other, you know, without needing to go to the addictive thing. And I don't know if that's a restriction. There's certainly some kind of restriction to be able to create, you know, being conscious about how we're using it as opposed to a... you know, every age trying to figure that out. We have restrictions on that, not to hold back, but to allow our, you know, our youth to really be able to be cognizant of what they need to develop into social human beings. So,
but do you know what, Jared? Hold on, because you're touching on something here. Because I want to make sure I get this. I mean, if my callers are getting this as well, that when you have your phone, your social media, you put a post out there, or you send an email. When it comes back, when it dings, because everything dings, right? Twitter dings when you get a tweet or a retweet.
Right.
Facebook dings, and there's like a shot of dopamine released because all of a sudden, I mean, it's almost like somebody likes me, and it feels good. You go on, you read the tweet, and then you get let down. Because either the high is gone till it, because you want it again.
Exactly. Yeah, and so the sense of the up and down of that is never fulfilling.
Wow.
It just makes you want more. And so the buzz and then the read, you know. And so, you know, there's that joke out there of the phantom text. You think your phone is buzzing in your pocket, but it's not. It's your body wanting it, you know. And I think that we have to, you know, be there. We just need to be really cognizant of the fact that that's a really powerful tool that's happening in our system. And it is allowing us to connect both for good and bad on macro levels. But in terms of what that's doing to the addictive qualities that our brain has, if we're giving that to people who aren't aware of that or don't have the tools yet of, you know, their developmental social qualities in high school, middle school, then they're going to feel depressed and then go to Facebook and say, I feel sad. And everyone say, no, you're great. We love you. And then they feel good, but still slightly dissatisfied.
Wow. But you know what?
I
just want to say one more thing before you go, because I mean, I just think this is great. I'm glad you called in as an expert in this area. Given that we have safeguards, Jared, for gambling, drinking, and smoking, nobody in their right mind would give a 3-year-old a 40-ounce bottle of beer, right? You wouldn't give a 5-year-old a cigarette in your right mind. But in a sense, you're giving them something that's just as addictive, and you're starting them off on this addiction at such an early age.
Totally. Now, here, just if I can have one more thought about this, is the difference between gambling, smoking, and drinking versus the internet is that the internet is a two-way street. You know, the bottle doesn't tweet back.
Right.
So it's a complicated topic because in order for me to go get, you know, hired somewhere in freelance world or something, I need the internet.
Right.
So it is a social construct that we absolutely need, and that's part of our developmental skills as humans now. So it's a push-pull, and I'm not quite sure what the answer is, but we need to equip our kids of how to apply for jobs.
Right.
We need to hold them back from the analogy of the bottle. So,
right, because my son is applying for college, and everything's happening electronically.
Right.
Like, he's engaging.
If you're not savvy in that, then that's really detrimental to your development as a successful human being growing up. So I think there's a larger conversation of, you know, how we can allow the things we need
professionally to happen, while also being really cognizant of the fact that, you know, the addictive qualities of it all in our body. So
I appreciate it. You know, actually, Jared, if you cannot hang up, I'm going to ask my producer, Justine, I want to get your contact information because we want to have that larger conversation. And we'd love to invite you back to be a part of it. So don't hang up. Okay, Justine is talking to him now. All right, folks, I mean, I just think that's very interesting. The fact that dopamine, something akin to dopamine, gets released when you get that ding on your phone. You put that Facebook post up. You spend hours trying to get the best picture. Come on, let's be real here. Nobody puts a bad picture up on Facebook. You spend hours crafting that tweet because we all want to have the, you know, million retweets. Because, as Jared just laid out, it's giving you that artificial high. Like he said, gambling, drinking, and smoking. It's giving you that high. You feel good. And then when you don't have it anymore, your feelings drop. You get depressed. You go down. And you want that hit again. Think about giving that to your child. Gambling, drinking, and smoking is similar in terms of this addictive qualities as social media, and we're giving it to a 3-year-old. We're giving it to our 13-year-old son who goes off in his room and closes the door. We have no idea what's going on in there, but research does because they can track that exactly what he's doing, and they're letting us know. Let's keep talking about it. 410-319-8888. I have Curtis on the phone from Gwynn Oak. Curtis, how are you?
How are you doing, doctor?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Good. So dopamine, you brought a great point, and that's a pain that we all are feeling. So there's a whole lot of things that's going on with the phone here. Conspiracy, such as the TV itself with smart TVs, where they can look at you through the TV, your toasters and the microwaves hearing you and all that other stuff. Great. Weak-minded children and parents in a sense of the dopamine, again, once again, steps into place. The reason why the government won't do something like a campaign to stop this or to educate is because it is against the big donors' money.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't do that.
Right.
But that is what's needed. So
when you say that's what's needed, hold on, I want to make sure. When you say that's what's needed, so you actually think the government does need to step in and do some regulation here?
What I'm trying to say is a campaign.
When
they want something done, they'll go through someone to do a campaign and educate the people. Okay. They will not do that directly because it is against the big donors' wishes.
Okay.
You agree?
I agree. No, I do. I do think that when you start looking at who actually controls the media, I remember the days of Ma Bell. Remember that? Until they broke up Ma Bell into the Baby Bell. There's something about having concentrated economic power in the hands of one company. Hello, Microsoft, Facebook. I mean, to have that type of power in the hands of one company.
Exactly. And I believe the last thing I want to come up with, as far as the internet is concerned, this has been playing people don't understand. This has been playing many years ahead. The same way that the dollar, the way it's going down, has been playing 40, 50 years ahead of time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Long range.
Another thing people all got to understand, this has been planned already. And you're right. This is also an experiment for our children.
Yeah. Because we don't know. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. An experiment on our children. Folks, are you aware that you're allowing the government to experiment on your children? Think about what we just heard about technology. Think about that the next time you hand your phone to your child. Maybe the government should step in. I mean, I know what I'm saying is pretty controversial. I know people don't agree with it. That's why I want to hear from you. Do we need Big Brother and Big Sister? And I say that kind of jokingly, but do we need them to step in and say, you know what, just like we have safeguards on who can go into that gambling casino, right? We don't want a 7-year-old in there. We don't want a 16-year-old in there. Just like we have safeguards, we don't want anyone under the age of 21 being able to go buy liquor. We need to have safeguards on cigarettes. Maybe we need some safeguards on technology. Maybe it's time to turn it off and not us turning it off. Maybe they need to turn it off for us. So, you know, kind of do like a real quick, do this big withdrawal, go cold turkey until we get back to being the society where we are more in communication with one another. Maybe That's what we need to happen. I don't know if it ever even existed. Let's talk about it. We have Lolita on the phone from East Baltimore. Lolita, how are you?
I'm fine. I just chimed in and I heard the gentleman run down some of the science. I was
like, wow, this was really something.
Interesting. Yeah. I just want to just put out there some things that I did that I found to be solutions. I used to have like music tones on my phone ringer, and I realized one day that I was hearing that sound in my head when that phone was not even ringing. So, you know, I recognize the fact that I grew up in a generation where we had the landline. So, you know, I don't hear, you know, the ring from landline.
Right.
So I switched my phone ringer to a regular sounding house phone. And so now I do not have that chiming sound in my ears that music is going off. So there's something very scientific about, you know, music in terms of hearing it when you are not actually it's being played. So, yeah, I do agree that there is this conscious, unconscious manipulation of the population. And also, the other thing that I've done, I've turned off all my notifications.
So you don't get the dings at all then?
Yes.
Okay.
Only important notifications do I want to be getting, and that's my Blackboard notification and maybe a few others, because I find that that is very distracting and it's programming and conditioning us to respond to a little beep on the phone, and it's creating a short, it's furthering our short-term attention span.
Well, let me ask you this, Lolita. So since they're experimenting this week with the current person who's occupying 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, being able to send a text directly to your phone, it has to be an emergency, although it seems like with 45, everything's an emergency.
Mm-hmm.
But should Trump or anyone in that sense, anybody, have that kind of access to us without us explicitly giving them that type of permission?
Well, honestly, I don't tweet.
No, this is a text. This is a text message.
And I don't get text messages. I see them showing up in Google news all the time. But I find that what's going on in the White House is a major distraction from the political, economic issues that are being done to us Americans without us knowing.
Right. And this will be another distraction.
To environmental issues. So to me, Trump is a distraction. So I am trying not even to listen to him anymore on the streets, because we already understand who he is.
Right.
And he's just going to continue on the same thing. And we're going to continue. And most people who are not paying attention will continue on feeding into his rants and raids. But in the end of the day, when they wake up, they're going to realize some serious policy changes that affects their economics, their families.
You're absolutely right.
And they're sleeping all through it by getting caught up in the drama and the gossip.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, people love drama.
I agree.
That's why we watch TV.
Thank you so much, Lolita. We have Mr. P on from Pikesville. Mr. P, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for calling.
Yes. The government has already stepped in regulating. they're letting you know that, hey, we don't have to let you know that we're going to start regulating. It's already happening.
Yeah.
I remember a conversation in one of your talk shows that they're coming after us.
Yes.
You know, so it's already in place, you know, and they're letting you know that, hey, this is what we're going to do. You know, those robocalls and stuff like that.
It's already getting in our household. They're already coming in.
And you wonder, you go, the dopamine says, how in the hell did they get my phone number?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
so
I know what you mean.
That's a message.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes, it is.
That's a deep message right there. And one of your callers were mentioning that that they don't let their children get on the phone and so forth.
Right.
But she let her 5-year-old take a picture.
Oh, yeah,
of her.
That's
you
true.
Know, so
that's
that
true.
Right there, that child is not going to forget that.
Yeah. That know, sensation, that feeling. Yeah.
He's going to ask for that phone again. You know, so yes, it does start at home. The government is us.
Yeah, that's true.
And I got a couple of your callers, what they were saying. it starts at home. That old-fashioned saying, family and living starts at home. And it does.
Yeah, but I wonder, Mr. P, I wonder. So people who are listening now, you already got your kids on it, right? So, I mean, you know, I'm thinking now about my own sons with their phones. How do you dial it back? Like, so how far can you dial it back?
You sit down and talk to them. Oof. Like your parent talked to you.
Yeah, well, my father would take it. I'm going to take it, and we'll talk later.
can we have a family hour or so?
Yep.
You know,
put the technology up.
I'll get off the phone in a minute, and we can have the family hour.
Mm.
You know, but it's to me, it's kind of too late, and it's not to get your kid right now.
Yeah, you need them young. You need them young.
The government is us.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you so much, Mr. P.
No problem.
So we're going to leave it here for just a moment, folks. When we come back, we're going to wrap up our conversation around technology. I'm going to keep the phones open on this topic a little bit longer, have you chime in about the government regulating our technology. And then I'm going to switch topics. Let me read you a quick story from Carol Oat on Twitter. I am 50. I was raped when I was 16 by a boy who went to my high school. I was a virgin. I blamed myself. I continued to be ashamed and embarrassed and told no one until I was 40. I have never used the word rape until just now. It never goes away. Hashtag no Kavanaugh confirmation. That hashtag is trending. We're going to talk about that when we come back. We'll wrap up our conversation on the internet, and we're going to talk about Kavanaugh. How many years does it take before you bring a person to justice? This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Wyatt. Keep it here for a quick update from MTA, and then we'll talk on the other side.
And a good evening, everybody. We have a bus diversion downtown, 54 northbound and 94 southbound, both diverted at Utah and Mulberry. 54 southbound and 94 northbound diverted at Utah and Saratoga. This is because of police activity. Light rail link services discontinued through October the 4th for maintenance and rail replacement on the northern end between the Timonium Fairgrounds and Hunt Valley stops. The local link number 93 bus is operating between the affected stations to accommodate riders. At present, light rail link services operating on time. No delays reported with the Metro Subway Link. For the MTA Transit Team, I'm Ken Berger on 88.9 FM WEAA, the voice of the community.